feet to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man should be free.
Well, welcome to Voices from the Front Lines, your movement building show, Revolutionary Roundtable. Wake up and smell the revolution. As always, we have a full show again today. We've been having a pattern of full shows this year. So we have about five things on deck today. First of all, I always forget, my name is Channing Martinez, co-host of Voices from the Front Lines. I'm on air with Eric Mann, the other co-host of Voices from the Front Lines.
Good morning.
And we have a lot on deck today, so I'll just name them without any order. First of all, I want you to save the date. March 1st, 6 o'clock at Strategy and Soul, we'll be having a film showing of this film, Americond, with Sean Claffey and Chris Smalls. And if you don't know those names off the top, Chris Smalls is the leader of, one of the leaders of the whole Amazon struggle. And organizing Amazon workers. And so this film really dives into that struggle. So save that date. Tickets will be live on the Voices from the Front Lines and Strategy Center website early next week, hopefully on Monday. So that's number one. Number two, we're going to be talking about the Black Student Achievement Program and our long fight to end the school-to-prison pipeline and move towards a liberated future in LAUSD. Second, as promised, Eric's article has been published on Counterpunch. Have you read it? If you have not read it, go pull it up now so you can read it right after the show. We're going to be talking about some of the highlights and what Eric is, how should I say it, the tactical path that Eric was taking by publishing that article. And the name of the article is "The Palestinian Resistance is Winning. The Movement Must Expose and Defeat Benjamin Netanyahu's Final Solution to the Palestinian Problem," published in Counterpunch, and you should be able to go right on to our website today and see a direct link to that article. Then always, we love music, so we're going to be talking about Hector Lavoe's El Cantante. And then lastly, as you know, we are in Fund Drive and KPFK needs your help. And if you have not called already, we're going to call on you to call 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK, and we'll be talking more about the Fund Drive later in today's show.
Woo. Yeah, it was great, Channing. I'm exhausted just listening. And, you know, I want to start with asking our listeners about giving money to KPFK. You know, we, Channing and I spend a lot of time on the show. We are volunteers, we work on it. I mean, God, 3-4 hours each, at least, a week. So that's one of our contributions. And I tell you this every time. This station is always going to be in financial trouble. That's the nature of it. And you all are going to solve the problem every time. We always make it. But only we make it because you just realize that if you want to hear voices every week, that's certainly okay that once a month we really push you to say we need to do a fund drive. The other thing I want to say is that Michael Novick, our general managers, again, if you can imagine, unpaid, working 40, 50 hours a week. He's given us this show at 7 a.m. on Fridays, and we have to protect the politics of this station, because right now I'm going to read an article that you heard about genocide in Gaza. This article could not be read on hardly any other station. So you get it, 818-985-5735. Let's raise $1,000 today, okay? So, hey, everybody, this is Eric Mann. I'm the co-host of Voices from the Front Lines, along with Channing Martinez. And, you know, the name of the show, again, is why do we call it Voices from the Front Lines? Because we think that there is no problem you want to discuss without hearing some optimism about the chance to change something about it. It doesn't mean that their critics and analysis are important, but we think most organizers can bring in the criticism, bring in the analysis, but then we're the ones who stay up all night sewing, so what are we going to do? So at a time of tremendous anti-blackness, starting in about 1300 with those Europeans, and starting, you know, at 1619 or whatever, we are involved in a tremendous struggle at the LAUSD, which is winning in a lot of ways, you know. So we passed, and I say we, Students Deserve, Cadre, Inner City Struggle, Community Coalition, UTLA, and others, you know, we'll mention. We're a coalition, and we work well together. It's called the Police Free LAUSD Coalition. So it was about 3 years ago, we won $100 million for a black student achievement program. We also won a cut in the school police of $25 million, which is 35% of their budget. But here's the problem. Anything you win in this capitalist system, they give it to you on Monday and they start taking it away on Tuesday. We've been in a pretty bloody struggle with the school board. We have some good allies there. But we don't think the board is doing a really good job to protect the Black Student Achievement Plan, and Channing's going to talk about it. So that's the main thing. We won something, and now Channing, who works in the both Police Free USD and also the Black Student Achievement Plan program, is going to talk about two problems. So the first is, you and I were talking, but I don't fully understand. Tell me about what's going on with the community-based safety program. Tell us a little bit what it was, because we know Tanya Ortiz Franklin passed it, but what's happening with it? So why don't we start there?
So sure, yes. Tanya Ortiz Franklin worked with the Police Free LAUSD Coalition to pass what she felt was the best motion she could pass at the time, which was around fully implementing the community-based safety alternatives. And so what is that? When we first got funds for BSAP, and then the next year we got, you know, up to $100 million for BSAP, $15 million of those dollars were supposed to go annually to community-based safety alternative programs. It means that instead of calling police on students, you have these alternative programs that are supposed to deal with safety inside of schools. So one, which is the most popular that you all might know about, is Safe Passage. Can students even walk to or take the bus to school safely?
Right.
Two is this idea of peacekeepers, meaning folks that are specifically trained to de-escalate situations inside of schools and around schools. Oftentimes, it doesn't take very much to de-escalate a situation. It just takes some really strategic words in most cases. And three is training students around different modes of how do you deal with physical and mental trauma that goes on in schools between students, right?
Right. So,
you know, a lot when I was going to high school, a lot of the fights were over someone stepping on your shoe, right? And so it is trying to create programs around, you know, first of all, that's not that bad of offense, number one. But two is how do you deal with all the mental, emotional things that are going through your head when you're really angry that someone stepped on the only thing that you see as valuable in your life?
And we inherited that. I mean, we understood that the oppressed have problems, the oppressed fight. And the police have always said, well, see, that's why you need us. So we've always said, well, you know, you created half the problems that people are fighting over, and we want you to get out and we can solve it. The problem is that have we been given the money and the support to solve it? If we don't, the police are going to come back and say, see, I told you. Mm-hmm. So what's going on? I mean, you're on the front lines, and so what is happening in this concept, what's the problem, and what have you discovered that's new about the problem?
Yeah, the discovery is daunting. So what's going on is there has been the LAUSD independent analysis unit that is supposed to be going group to group and talking to people about what their perception of safety is and how it's working in LAUSD and how it's not working, what is the solution. They've done great with talking to the community groups. They had two different listening sessions. They're supposed to also talk to students. They all are also supposed to talk to teachers, and they're also supposed to work with the LA County, whatever that program is, around youth. I can't, it'll come to me soon.
Yeah, sure.
They have not. And they were scheduled to do a initial report back to the board, which they've done so far. And we found that the report was, they haven't done anything. I mean, if you gave the Strategy Center that task, we would have had it done in 2 weeks. They had, I don't know, 4 months to meet with folks and come up with a really decent preliminary report to show where you're going.
I'd rather take the 4 months and do it right.
I agree. I mean, we would take the 4 months and we would have a whole report.
That's exactly right.
Right?
Exactly right.
Imagine they had 4 months and they came back to say that we talked to the community members and we're going to talk to students and we're going to talk to these folks, but we've concluded that LAUSD should not be leading on this front of ground community-based safety alternatives, that we're not geared to do that, and you know, a bunch of other bullcrap things I just won't.
But stay there. That was really good, because when I was, we were at the meeting, we listened to that report.
We did.
And I've never heard a group that comes back after 4 months and says, what we decided is we don't want to do it and we're not good at it.
With $15 million.
Right.
$15 million. I mean, that.
So what are they, so let's be clear, what are they trying to do by saying that?
They are already setting up what I hate to use this again because we used it with Metro. I'm going to use it again. Is they're setting up a poison pill with inside the program, right? Which means that, number one, they're setting up to say that this whole idea of community-based safety is not going to work. And LAUSD has no capacity to do it. And while it was great that we did it during the whole George Floyd, let's not count on it being a long-term thing to eventually replace the school police.
Yeah. So, I think that's going to be something we can do, is that we have to put out our own report on their report, what you're doing. I mean, the voice you're listening to is Channing Martinez, the co-director of the Strategy Center. And, you know, one of the things about being a revolutionary, you don't understand, most of you, is that there are, mainly our revolutionary is not running in the streets saying socialism, communism, anti-imperialism. Not that that's bad, we do that too. But now you're in a dilemma, which is, in this country, how do you get a system to change? Because they're going to say, don't you want to come to the school board? Don't you want to sit in this committee? And half the time, you got to say yes, especially if you think there's something up for grabs. Now, this sounds a major change, like I put it, to do a study and the people come back and say, what we decided is we don't want to do it and we can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, there is. So where do you go from there?
There's even more.
All right, tell us. Right. That's a big breakthrough.
The other thing is then, so they gave this report to the board, and they're supposed to be tasked, or a subcommittee of the board, I should say, and they are supposed to be tasked with giving it to BSEP, which they have now, and we've fought for that meeting to be more than 1 hour once per month, and so we were able to really dive in for 3 hours, and we got a lot of clarity. What we found out is, even the best community-based safety alternatives in the way that LAUSD is phrasing it will not replace the duties of LA school police. They are allowed to verbally de-escalate situations, but anything physical, anything requiring a weapon, then we were instructed that they are instructed to not intervene, number one. And number two, either call an administrator or frankly, to call the LA school police. And, you know,
who's the they? I was confused.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. So practitioners, in this case, the example that was used is anyone that is helping to put on safe passage programs.
Right.
What that means is someone with a vest and a walkie-talkie is about, you know, a few miles, maybe a few blocks from school, and they are supposed to stand on the block to make sure students are passing by. There's nothing going, you know, to hurt students. Most things that happen on the way to school are, you know, conflicts between students, because I mean, it's not so much, at least in many areas, it's not so much conflict in the neighborhood anymore, but it is conflicts with students. And so when a conflict happens, they are instructed to de-escalate verbally. But if there is any weapon or any physical altercation, they are not allowed to jump in. They are supposed to get on the radio, call the administrator, or call the school police.
Well, wouldn't you make a distinction between a weapon and a fight? Because I wouldn't be jumping in on the weapon. I'm saying, you know, we're talking, but I think what we're both saying, because we talked to the MTA about this, we're there. We're in this community. 90% of the time, anybody with force in the positive sense, and a good, as you said, a good way of talking to people, says, no, this ain't happening. Stop it. And I have some authority to stop you, and I want you to stop it. Most of the time, that will, you know, and you might need some physical, you know, get your hands off this one. All right, see, what I'm saying is, let's look in the real world. We knew this was going to be like this. If you're a safe passage program and you got a vest on, what do you think is going to happen? If people are having a fight on the bus, if people are having a fight in front of the school, we are arguing armed people are not necessary to break up a problem of unarmed people.
No, not at all.
But I know we think that, but I'm saying we thought we agreed with them on that, and they come back. So I'll get right away. What are you going to do about it?
We're going to fight like hell for the alternative. First of all, is that we're writing this report, Black Liberation Education, and that is going to document both what is going on in LAUSD, but also what is the theory of what we're trying to solve with the creation of BSAP, depletion of the school police and the alternative, and fighting beyond, you know, the whole idea of school police to ending the whole criminal justice and police state in LAUSD. That's number one. Two is we're going to put out as many flyers and do as many events of popular education among the students and parents and teachers inside of schools so that they can know what's going on in LAUSD.
Yeah, and I'd say the we there is the Police Free LAUSD Coalition, because they're the ones who called the meeting, and I think everybody in the coalition is really upset about it, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to get together in the coalition and figure out some kind of campaign, which I'm sure everybody is already thinking about, right?
Absolutely. And then the third, because I always forget to do the third, is we always go to public comment, and we're going to be in public comment in March. I think the LAUSD board meeting is March 12th. I think that's a Tuesday. So we'll be going to the LAUSD board meeting, doing public comment. And each time there, it's not like we are, to be quite frank with you, KPFK listeners, it's not like we're inviting you to do public comment, but for you to come and stand in solidarity with the Strategy Center, with the Police Free LAUSD Coalition, because they do count, to be quite frank.
Yeah, and one other thing before we get to the organizing is we're in an interesting situation where we have three board members, Tanya Ortiz Franklin, Kelly Gomez, and Rocio Rivas, who have been very supportive, who care about us. They're in a very difficult situation. So we have to go to the board and say, look, on one level, we know you're our ally, you fought for us. Kelly Gomez did an amazing job around the defund vote. On the other hand, we have to say there's some slippage here in that you did a whole report, you passed something important, and now you're getting information that the bureaucracy is already sabotaging, I'm using that word. They come back with a proposal not to do what they said they were supposed to do. So we need to figure out those three board members. We're going to meet with them and talk to them. What are they going to do? Because it's sabotaging their work and their intentions. So, okay, so we're going to do that. Now, in that you're also an organizer in the streets and the schools, I heard you had a really great day today. So tell us a little bit about what's happening at Augustus Hawkins High School, including where is it?
Yeah, Augustus Hawkins High School is in the middle of South Central LA, Vermont and Slauson. And it's a fairly new school, new as in the last, 7 years or so. And it started as a social justice school in which the Strategy Center is one of at least 15 organizations and teachers helped to dream up. And so I run a social justice club there during lunch with a core of about 20, 30 students. And what we did today was a popular survey, is what I call it. So I put up several questions, about 7 questions up on a poster board. And the way we prepared for this was the week before we ourselves, the students inside the club, answered those questions ourselves to see if we agreed. And then we put them up on a poster for students in the general school to come out during lunch and answer those same questions.
What are you going to tell us the questions?
So here are a few of the questions. And I'll tell you the positive and the negative, because what we did is we took the for argument for the question and the against argument. So okay. For example, is schools feel like a safe haven because ... fill in the blank, right? Opposite of that is school feels like a police state because, and most students said it feels like a police state because they treat us like we're inmates. I believe school does not prioritize my mental health. They do this by, or they show this by, fill in the blank. I believe schools prioritizes my mental health. They do this by. And then the biggest one that's the most popular is school police keep us safe. We need more police because, and no one agreed with that side, I have to say today. And school police don't keep us safe because. And I want to read you at least one of these
please,
answers.
Please, if not a lot. Sort
of beautiful.
No, please, a lot of them.
Here's one. A student said, school feels like a police state because we have to follow a curriculum. If we need to use the bathroom, we can be told no. We get in trouble for having our phones, but it's the only thing that keeps us in contact with our parents. It feels like prison.
Keep going. You have others.
One question we asked about is whether you agree with the Black Student Achievement Program or disagree. And that was a strategic question because there were, in the implementation of Black Student Achievement Programs, some class divides, I'll call them. And so we're surprised that most students agreed, and it says, I agree with the Black Student Achievement Program because Black students are honestly struggling. There should be an additional investment and additional help from other Black teachers.
Keep going, read more, just read them.
A lot of them were, sort of one sentence, one word things. Under do police keep you safe? If they did, we wouldn't have so many lockdowns. Let me see. A school police does not keep us safe. School police don't care about us or our lives. More police would make certain nothing bad happen. Oh, I missed that one. I didn't see that one. And then a lot of, one word things about we don't like the school police. They don't keep us safe.
So as an organizer, you're at Augustus Hawkins. How many students were participating today?
Oh, today was hard to count. I think we got at least 100, 200 students come up to us during the lunch period.
Well, you should tell me that again. I would have been in a much better mood. So that's great news. That's phenomenal news. So how do you feel? I mean, you're an organizer. This is a step along a lot of places. How do you feel about the day?
I think it's a big step in the right direction. And that is because from everything that's written on paper from LAUSD, you would assume that 100% of LAUSD students love the police, that the police are caring adults on campus, and that we need more. And what I saw, and, okay, I'm sorry, that's one. And two, it's very hard for us running a club to be able to have access to the full student body in many ways, right? We are allowed to have a club meeting in our teacher sponsors classroom. And Hawkins is slightly different than other campuses, but most times you're not allowed to go to the lunchtime period and just speak to students, right? You get kicked out of class, out of school for that on a different campus, right? And so that was also a big breakthrough today, is that students did not feel deterred by administration to really reflect on what their real thoughts on school police are. And so what it means is that we get to then move the whole conversation in the most public way in the school.
It's very exciting work, Channing. I mean, our listeners out there, this is the complexity of doing work, working with real people, building a base. We have been experimenting, by the way, with this. You know, Kuna Uka and I did this program called The Great Debaters. We saw a film with Denzel Washington, but we did our own debate on the presidential elections. But what we were trying to show, frankly, was we weren't really trying to debate the presidential elections as much as showing people how a debate happens, how critical thinking happens, how each position has strengths and weaknesses. Do you even know the weaknesses in your own position? Do you even know the strengths of the other person's? If you don't, you're unpersuasive, because life is complicated and some things are 60-40. They may be morally right, but so the point is, you did a survey, which is what we're starting to build into our organizing work, that says, all right, here's the affirmative, and it is called the negative, but we call it the dissent. And you have to learn to fight for what you think intellectually. And I'm speaking for me, it's a great story and raises my morale.
Yeah, I mean, and let me take that point. In the last year, Hawkins had a totally different administration. And for that point you just said, to be able to fight for what you believe in intellectually, I can tell you last year during this time, students were afraid to fight for what they believed intellectually, believing that they were going to be suspended, expelled, or all of their activities, which, you know, and happened a lot, would be canceled, including prom or things that, you know, sports or art classes would be canceled because you think a certain way. And so that is the other breakthrough today, is that students were not going to be threatened with suspensions.
Well, you know, it's funny because I was watching CNN, and all they're talking about is this guy Putin. Apparently, he's a bad guy, and apparently, he makes people not be able to speak in class, and they're threatened about being kicked out of school, and Putin's no good, and Biden's going to kill him. And are you saying that in America, the United States of America, that students could be kicked out of prom if they challenge the system?
Absolutely.
All right. So you get it, folks. You know, I watch CNN. I'm sorry, it gets me sick. It's Trump, 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 Biden, 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 Putin, Putin, Putin. And it's never about black people at all. It's like, it's not about anybody in the real world. Right. So we go back to South Central and we organize in the community, and we're the ones who think that the black and Latinx community and the working class, we're the center of history. They are the center of history. And that's why someday we're going to have our own, you know, the Communist Revolutionary Black Liberation Network. We'll be on five channels and all this stuff.
Absolutely.
All right. But Channing, nice work, really nice work. And it's, you know, when we do the show, folks, you know, a lot of times we don't want to know everything until we hear it on the show so I can get new information. So nice job, comrade. Very impressive.
Thanks so much. Welcome back to Voices from the Frontlines. The interview you just heard was with myself, Channing Martinez, co-host of Voices from the Frontlines, and Eric Mann on LAUSD and the Black Student Achievement Program. As always, you'll get all the links that are related with that conversation on our website. And while I'm talking about our website, you should go on your cell phone right now and type in www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com and sign up for our mailing list. And now we're about to talk about this really famous song, El Cantante. And after that, as mentioned in the beginning, we're going to be talking about Eric's article on Palestine.
So again, hey everybody, you know, we bring music into this show, whether I'm singing or sing along, but we just love music, and we think talk is great, but music is also great. So I, besides listening to oldies a lot, I really listen to, when I work out and everything, I listen to the Celia Cruz Pandora station, and one of my all-time favorite songs is called El Cantante by Hector Lavoe. Now, the reason I want to talk to you about it is that, first of all, it's the name of a film also, El Cantante, with Mark Antony and J-Lo. So that's a whole nother story. But so Mark Antony is Puerto Rican, so is Hector Lavoe. Hector Lavoe was the probably greatest singer in the 60s, 70s, 80s, everybody would, I think, agree, everybody in the field, of the salsa revolution. There was a record company called Fania, F-A-N-I-A, and they had the Fania All-Stars, now Celia Cruz, Johnny Pacheco. So Hector Lavoe actually was a singer with the great Willie Colon. So all these people I know, you know, I mean, I know this pretty good stuff, and I'm from New York, this is also. So, why am I playing this particular song? Because, you know, I think Europeans think that they invented everything. You know, they didn't. But also, there's a racism that thinks that salsa is just whatever. But salsa is amazing. Not that Latinos think this, by the way, but I'm speaking to the Western mind. The reason I love this is it's a symphony. It's a 10-minute cut. And I worked out to it. I danced to it. It has stanzas. I don't even know the right words. You know, it has different moods. It moves forward and backwards. It has a call and respond. It has a refrain. And every time I go walking with it, I listen to it, and it goes on and on, which I love. I like long things, as you know. So with that, the music will now speak for itself. And the reason, by the way, I just realized they call it El Cantante is because he was called El Cantante, meaning he was considered the singer of the singers, the greatest of all. And with this, Hector Lavoe, El Cantante.
Que hoy han venido a escuchar lo mejor del repertorio. A ustedes voy a brindar y canto a la vida de risas y penas, de momentos malos y de cosas buenas. Vinieron a divertirse y pagaron en la puerta. Tiempo para tristeza, vamos cantante, comienza. Me paran siempre en la calle, mucha gente que comenta. Oye Héctor, tú estás hecho siempre con hembras y en fiestas sin alegría. una pena que hiere muy hondo. Yo soy el cantante porque lo mío es cantar y el público paga para poderme escuchar. Yo soy el cantante muy popular donde quiera, pero cuando el show se acaba soy otro humano cualquiera y sigo mi vida con risas y penas, con ratos amargos y con cosas buenas. Yo soy el cantante y mi negocio es cantar, y a los que me siguen mi canción voy a brindar. Lo mío es cantar, cantar.
Hoy te dedico mis mejores pregones.
El pregón de la montaña, esas sí que eran canciones.
Hoy te dedico mis mejores pregones.
Olé, lo, la, 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 la. Escucha mi pregón que dice. que merecen honores.
Hoy te dedico mis mejores pregones.
Al mundo estremezco yo, prepárense bailadores.
Hoy te dedico mis mejores pregones.
Cantando olvido las penas y también los sinsabores.
Hoy te dedico mis mejores pregones.
So hey everybody, Eric Mann on Voices from the Frontlines. You're on KPFK, the great KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, streaming live on the web at www.kpfk.org, and you can listen to our show both live and later go on the site, and also go to voicesfromthefrontlines.com. So today I'm very happy. I work with my wife, Leanne, on an article called "The Palestinian Resistance is Winning. The Movement Must Expose and Defeat Netanyahu's Final Solution to the Palestinian Question." So I'm not going to read too much from my article because you should read the article. But I thought sometimes I wanted to lay out, what is this article trying to say, to give you a sort of a reader's guide as to... So, all right, it's a good article, but what were you trying to say that's maybe that I didn't understand you were trying to say? So the first thing is that the plan to annihilate the Palestinian people is terrifying, but it's strategic. The final solution means that the Israelis have tried everything else, but now, after Hamas, they believe they cannot allow Palestinians to live in their own land. Therefore, they're carrying out mass murder. The second thing is that the term genocide is being used rhetorically, and people don't know what it means to them. I mean, they certainly know when they're seeing it. God knows. I don't mean it like that. They know mass murder is genocide, but a lot of people think it's only mass murder. Or when things are bad, people say, well, it's genocide, but they think it's not really. But it is. Genocide means an attack on any group of people by a government that's trying to debase and displace them. And in my article, I go into the specifics of the 1948 Genocide Convention. But, for instance, if there are 200,000 people in the United States prisons who are black, that's genocide. If black people die at outrageous numbers during COVID, that is genocide. If the Palestinians are forced to give half of their own land because England gave it to Israel, that's genocide before it even did anything else. So... it is mass murder we're talking about as a specific form of genocide. the most horrific of all. Now, in my article, I go into some of the history of Israel and Zionism. The most important thing to understand is that we knew it. I mean, we in the 60s knew that. Now, today, there's this amazing book called The 100 Years War on Palestine by Rashid Khalidi. It's great. It tells the whole story in a narrative and brilliant way. But back in the 60s, we had all kinds of research on this. For instance, we all knew that Zionism was a racist, imperialist conception developed in the 1880s by a guy named Theodore Herzl and others, all along had the plan to take Palestine from the Palestinians. Why did we know that? Because we were fighting against the war in Vietnam, because we were fighting for the Black Liberation Movement. Everybody in the anti-colonial movement knew about Palestine, for God's sake, and knew about Israel's crimes. So I'm just saying that's important to read the history. My article has some really good history in it. And of course, I urge you to read The 100 Years War Against Palestine. So a lot of us, and you have to understand, I was with the Congress of Racial Equality. We worked super close with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. I also worked with Students for Democratic Society. What do we all have in common? That we had learned about the genocide in Palestine and SNCC, which is just, I think, the greatest of all organizations, maybe, along with the Black Panthers and American Indian Movement, a few others, and CORE, Congress for Racial Equality. They came up with a statement as early as 1967. They did, hell no, we won't go on Vietnam. They also had a statement on Palestine. Now, there was this wonderful woman named Ethel Miner, who had been with the Nation of Islam. She came back to work with SNCC as the communications director, and she wrote Third World Roundup, The Palestinian Problem, based on the work of the Palestine Research Center. What is my point? That we knew the Palestine Research Center, and you should today know all the groups doing the work. So here's the end of her statement. Comrades, the situation in Palestine is clearly a question of right and wrong. In the Middle East, America has worked with and used the powerful Zionist movement to take over another people's home and replace the Palestinian people with a partner that has well served America's purpose, a partner that can help the United States and other white Western countries to exploit and control the nations of Africa, the Middle East, and Africa. I'm sorry, Africa and the Middle East. We have no choice but to resist. What's my point? Part of the reading the history is not just the history of Palestine, but the history of Jewish, Black support for the people of Palestine. Another thing you'll find out is that because the Israeli lobby and the people in the, you know, Jewish establishment were so threatened by Blacks and Jews supporting Palestine, that they came up with this thing of Black anti-Semitism. Blacks don't like Jewish people, which is crazy because it's a great relationship. And then they called us, the Jews, self-hating Jews. So you got to give Israel credit. That's what fascists do. A Black person stands up and speaks out on human rights. Oh, you're an anti-Semite. And if a Jewish person says it, well, you're not really Jewish anyway. Welcome to the fact that Israel is just plays dirty, dirty pool. And they're politically despicable, as well as what they're carrying out. Then the other thing I want you to do is start reading more. I mean, reading more. You know, when I was involved in the anti-war movement, I once got up in a debate with the State Department, and the State Department had all these facts about Vietnam, and it was, they knew what they were talking about, and I kept saying, you're a murderer, you're a murderer. And the people in the audience were going, and they were all on my side, they're going, that's the best you got? You're not prepared. You're a terrible representative. You're making us look stupid because this guy had all these facts. And I realized that I had been a disservice to the movement. So we started reading The Two Vietnams by Bernard Fall. We had a weekly coming out called I.F. Stone's Weekly that we all read. And he would document the State Department said this, but here's the real answer. Go check it out there. I think today, counterpunch.org is the analogy with I.F. Stone's Weekly. I mean, sure, I go on and see my own articles, but just the other day, I went on today, and there's about 8 articles that are great on Palestine, including a good friend of mine and ours, Marcy Winograd, who's just had a terrific history in everything. She's with Code Pink. So her article says, how nations could end Israeli genocide. Stop the weapons, stop the oil, stop the tech. She opens up, if the nations of the world, particularly the United States and the Arab countries, note the Arab countries, wanted to stop Israel's slaughter, torture, and ethnic cleansing in Gaza, they could do so tomorrow with suspension of oil, arms, and technology, imports and exports to Israel. Though free Palestine and let Gaza live, protesters may shut down bridges, occupy train stations, and march by the millions in cities across the globe. Key governments, the US, UK, Germany, Canada, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and India, continue to keep commerce humming. Monarchies in place of, and an empire standing even in the midst of the world court rule was a plausible case of genocide. Members of the United Nations would do the world a favor if they followed the lead of South Africa at the International Court of Justice to condemn both in deed and action the crimes of Israel. The point is that her article is great, and she's going to be on Voices next week to talk about it. What I'm saying is read, folks. Read my article. Read Marcy's article. There's just all kinds of great stuff. Read Khalida's book. You get it. There's a few more points. The 2024 elections, I make it one statement. To me, the debate is not Trump versus Biden. The debate is, how are we going to use the elections to help the people of Palestine, to help the people in black communities, indigenous communities? Doesn't mean you don't have to have a strategy, but don't start with Trump is this and Biden is this. Start with Palestine and end with Palestine. That's what we got to figure out. And then here's the most positive thing I'm going to end with. In my article, I said that a lot of the Western countries who are saying they're still with Israel are already trying to figure out their exit strategy. Mm-hmm. What they mean is they used Israel. That's what they do. They used Israel, and Jews should know this. They use the Jews when they needed them. But they're all anti-Semites, by the way. So at the end, they want to kick Israel out because if it doesn't serve their purposes. But here's, somebody wrote to me a very nice thing about a letter today saying, already on my article, all right, I like you, but how could you say that Palestinian resistance is winning in the middle of all this suffering? And I'll end with saying this. Israel, there's a headline, is dismayed that Prince William's call in England, that guy, for an end to the fighting in Gaza, but they do not want to enter into a public row with the future king following his unprecedented royal intervention. It was claimed last night an extraordinary and symbolically significant statement. The heir to the throne said, quote, this terrible human cost of the Israel-Hamas conflict has seen too many people killed and must stop. Hey, folks, did you think the King of England, the almost King of England, is going to support basically Hamas and tell Israel you can't do this? It doesn't stop the murder of the children tomorrow. I'm not trying to be so strategic. It's my article is still fundamentally about outrage. But you have to understand that Hamas brilliantly has created a conflict in the world. And now as Israel overreacts and exposes the ugly nation and the ugly ideology it is, the world is moving away from Israel. And that's the most hopeful thing I can offer. This is Eric Mann, you're on Voices from the Frontlines.
This is Channing Martinez, your co-host of Voices from the Frontlines. And as Nina Simone is going to tell you best in her song, My Way, and now the end is near, and so I've got to face the final curtain. And as you know, the feature of this song is, she did it her way, I did it my way, we did it our way, we didn't do it the way of the imperialist United States, and as Eric said, we started with Palestine, and we're ending with Palestine, and we'll keep talking about Palestine until liberation comes. This is KPFK. This is Voices from the Frontlines, and we need your help to support KPFK. And even as we're at the final curtain of this show, we want you to call 818-985-5735 to give a generous contribution today to keep this news going. Keep the movement's news and keep the movement's voice going on air where it belongs, in a revolutionary station. And one day we will, as Eric said, have our own station with 5 different channels, and it will be a revolutionary network. But until that day, we're all going to open our wallets and call 818-985-5735. As always, we love to hear from you. Email me or Eric, Eric or Channing at voicesfromthefrontlines.com, and go onto our website, www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com, and sign up for our newsletter. And until next week, we'll see you, read from you, and listen to you, and you'll hear from us on Voices from the Frontlines right here on KPFK. All power to the people. Through it all, when there was doubt, or if you fell, and you spread it all, I faced it all, and I stood tall. Bill.